I think a lot of current students or new grads kind of hide from their inexperience, so to speak, where some employers actually find it valuable. I think it's how you, if you sell it as I'm ashamed and I have nothing to offer, then you might be selling yourself short. In my experience, I actually overblow, hey, I might not be as experienced as the person I'm competing against, but I'm willing to learn. I bring a fresh perspective, and this is something your organization is going to benefit from.
This is the Public Health Insight Podcast.
Before we move on, it is important to note that the views expressed in this podcast are our own and do not represent any of the organizations we work for or are affiliated with.
In the previous episode, Ben, Linda, Gordon, and LaShawn share a variety of tips and tricks to help make your next job search more manageable. In this episode, they reveal hidden job search strategies you can use to find your next career opportunity in public health or global health. This is where we left off.
Speaking of opportunities, how do we find them? What sites do you guys recommend? Is it a Glassdoor, LinkedIn, or Indeed, or a combination, or what has more success over others?
I'll go after because this is where I'm gonna pop off.
In my experience, I've used anything and everything. I mean, LinkedIn has been helpful to kind of creep people to see who already is doing that role and what qualifications do they have. And, you know, this may not always be helpful. Comparison is not always helpful, but it helps to kind of see what is the baseline for what the employer is looking for. And then LinkedIn, yes, they often do have opportunities posted there, but sometimes it's not there. Sometimes things are just not posted online. And so it's using a combination of all your resources.
So I have a counterpoint to that.
Go.
Because I agree with what you're saying. And I've creeped people and they've been in this position for 10 to 15 years. And if I look at their qualifications, it'll be like, okay, they have a master's and then that's that. And then they're in this great position that they've been killing it. Now, if I look at that same position for a more recent job posting, the qualifications have changed. They want more training. They want more expertise. So it's a bit of a catch-22 in terms of what field you're going for, right? So I think people, when they're doing the research, should be also aware of that.
So that's a great point. And that's where, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, perhaps, but that's where networking would come in. So if you would then ask that person, maybe, hey, how has the field evolved since you've been in it? And what kind of new skills that you think are important that, you know, maybe you had to learn over the last 10 years that you didn't need to know before and stuff like that. So I think that's frustrating, but it also gives you valuable information on how to approach getting answers to your questions.
The value of LinkedIn, because there's that networking feature, there's also opportunities for employers to recruit themselves from LinkedIn and for recruiters to see who has qualifications that match what they're looking for. And it's not uncommon to be approached by recruiters there.
Doesn't LinkedIn have, like, I got this weird notification. Clearly, this is my LinkedIn inexperience showing. But it says, like, Ben, based off all of your qualities that you put on your LinkedIn profile, these are what jobs are recommended for you. So how does that work within the whole job searching process, right? Like, is that something you guys would recommend? Is that something that maybe is just a LinkedIn kind of scam, in quotation?
But, you know, to add to that too, LinkedIn, I noticed too, based on your clicks, LinkedIn actually basically will say, hey, it seems like you're interested in looking at these jobs. Here are some more jobs in that field. So LinkedIn kind of helps you with the job search, but I think the most important part of job searching is to actually identify employers. So employers being the organization rather than like the person making hiring decisions. That's important too, but I think for me, I found the most effective job search strategy, and it's easier to do if your geographic constraints are a little bit tighter. If you're like, hey, I want to work only in London, Ontario. Given that we're working in public health, my strategy is to identify all the companies in London, Ontario, and surrounding regions that employ people who have those certain skill sets, and then I go directly to their career websites every day and look at their page. Because, for example, there's some companies or organizations that have their kind of own job posting kind of portal, and then for some reason it doesn't get indexed very well with Google or Indeed or other job search engines. So then if you do exclusively a Google based search, you might miss out a lot on these opportunities. So for me, as much as tedious as it is, I just have like a list of 20 or 30 employers every day. I go, oh, next, no, nothing new. And then I find a lot of things that pop up this way. And the good thing with this as well is you'll know as soon as it happens, because there can be a lag time from when it's posted to when Google indexes it, or when Glassdoor or Indeed indexes it. So I think this keeps you more current in real time, and then you don't miss as many opportunities.
I always like the Google search strategy, as long as you're very refined in what you're doing. And the strategy that Gordon mentioned in terms of identifying some of these organizations, I think that's a very valuable method. You know, coming out of a public health degree, you kind of have these ideas of some organizations that you want to work with, whether it's the Public Health Agency of Canada, Public Health Ontario, PAHO, WHO. These are some organizations that you can use as keywords in addition to some other titles to kind of add to your leads. But even moving beyond that, some other kind of methods you could use to search for jobs is look at forms, job forms on the internet. There's like different forms within Reddit and other job platforms that you can go into and see the different comments and different strategies other people are using. Using newsletter listings, you could enter your email and you'll get a list of jobs sent to you every week, bi-weekly or monthly. So that's another useful strategy. And one of my favorites, and I think it's the easiest, especially if you're a student or recent graduate, contact alumni from the program that you just graduated from or you're currently in. They would most likely, and like, for example, I'm always willing to talk to people from my school and other schools as well, but I think they're a great resource to ask questions, and they're definitely inclined to help many of the students reaching out to them, sharing their experiences and insight. So I wouldn't downplay that.
And that's a good point too, LaShawn, because a lot of times people focus on, you know, networking with people who are 20 years ahead of where you are in, or need to be in your career, and that's not as useful because the market has changed so much since that person was in your shoes. And they might not be able to help you as intimately as you would hope. So someone who's 1, 2, 3, 4 years out of school in terms of being an alum, they're great resources because they're going through or have been through similar challenges as you, and you can pick their brains to see what tools and techniques they use to overcome the challenges that they had in their job search.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So we have all these job search strategies, and we have job postings that are readily available to us through our different levers. But what about jobs that are internal and that are not readily accessible, or that information is not available to the public outside of the organization? Is there any hope for people to get into that kind of market?
So I'll quickly jump into this one. So yes, I think there's some restrictions that come with that. So if we're looking internal, it might be just for people that are associated with that company already. So maybe as an outsider, you won't even have a chance.
Be eligible, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. However, I do understand that even though there are postings online that are readily available, the majority of jobs that are actually in fact available aren't posted. And that's where you can leverage some of these other techniques that we have used, whether it's through networking, which we'll get into a second, and using LinkedIn to expand your network and really get a better feel of what's out there.
Just to touch on that internal versus external posting, in my experience, I got very lucky in like my first job right out of grad school. It was with an organization that is mandated to hire internally if there is an internal candidate first. Like right. The internal people get precedence, and then if not, they can go external. And so it was just a 3-month contract. And so they were able to make the case that there was no internal person capable of doing the role, in part because of the short timeline. And then if it's internal, then there's more pressure to offer an extended role. So I got lucky for those reasons and because it was only temporary. But my supervisor had said she really was hoping and advocating to get a new grad as opposed to somebody who was internal, because it's less work for them in terms of having to unlearn some habits. They didn't have to worry about that. And so she's like, I don't know how I felt about it. In some cases, she was like, you're moldable because you're new. You don't have habits to unlearn. And I was like, okay. But at the same time, it showed that there was willingness to kind of subvert that internal versus external, you know, limitation and provide an opportunity. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had that role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in those situations, too, often when it's internal versus external, there is a union issue. So the positions in those situations are unionized and they're legally obligated to offer it internally before posting it for an external candidate. But that's a good point that you made about fresh blood, so to speak. I think a lot of current students or new grads kind of hide from their inexperience, so to speak, where some employers actually find it valuable. Mm-hmm. I think it's how you... If you sell it as I'm ashamed and I have nothing to offer, then you might be selling yourself short. In my experience, I actually overblow hate. I might not be as experienced as the person I'm competing against, but I'm willing to learn. I bring a fresh perspective, and this is something your organization is going to benefit from because public health is a modern field, such and such. And that's something that, you know, never fails me whenever I make the case for my candidacy for a position. So I think that's a good point that you brought up.
Okay, this is something that I struggled with during my job hunt. And so I just want to share it and see if anyone resonates. So, you know, when you're in school, you're given this kind of like, maybe a false hope, I guess, that you can do anything. You can change the world, whatever you want to do, it's there. Which are good things to kind of encourage you to dream big. But when you graduate, you realize your options are in a way limited to the positions that exist. Mm-hmm. Like you do not yet have the capacity to create your own position unless maybe you have amazing connections. Otherwise, you're limited to the roles that someone else has created. Meanwhile, you may see gaps that you think you could fill, but that role isn't made yet. That role is not there. So, as a new grad, you may feel that you're settling, and that's a frustrating concept to deal with when, as a student, you're told, like, you're gonna, the future of public health is yours, like, you're gonna change the world, but you're like, this role could be better, and it's not. And so sometimes you do have to settle just to get in there, and then you can, you know, finesse work from within.
A lot of it is expectations versus reality, right?
I'm an idealist, and sometimes it's just like, that's not the reality.
You and I are two separate sides of the same coin, Linda. Really? I'm on the other side of that.
But at the same time, if you're a very inexperienced entry-level person, and they're looking for someone or
the iceberg,
you know,
whatever,
3 to 5 years, and you don't have much experience, you're not able to make a case that you're able to fill that role. So it's that false sense that how many of those are available to you in that position that you're in. So I think it's, I see what you're saying there with a false hope that you could get a lot of what's available in that black box or that pool. But I think the key thing here is back to what LaShawn said. Self-assess, self-reflect, put your experiences down on paper. Look at the qualifications for the job that you're applying for. If the job says need someone with a regulated health professional with a pharmacy degree or nursing degree, and you don't have those, then you're not gonna get it. You know,
no matter what.
And that's in general terms. It's not in absolute terms. I'm sure there are exceptions to the rules, but in general, you're not gonna get the job.
Thanks, Ben.
You're not gonna get the job. So, this is another trick you could use too while we're on the job searching thing. For some organizations. And then if you do this often enough, you'll be very aware of what's out there. But some organizations, when they post a position, it will even say repost. Okay. Right. It'll say repost, or it will say some of the employers will also post a job at a certain date and it says it's open until filled. Right. So if you see those two things, open until filled, and it's like they posted this back in November. Right. Or reposted, and then if you're very current and you see that something has been reposted 2 or 3 times, that tells you that you're not getting the type of candidates that they want. And even though they might say, hey, we want a nurse for this position, if you feel like you meet the other qualifications, it might be worth some kind of taking a chance on that job, because they're just not able to recruit that ideal candidate that they're looking for, and you might have an opportunistic situation there where you could stand out and be offered some kind of interview for that. So
I want to go back to a point that Linda mentioned, and this kind of goes under the discussion of expectations versus reality. And I realize that many people, after graduating from, you know, a public health or global health program, you know, they have certain expectations, and one of those expectations might be, I want to secure a full-time job, permanent position. But the reality is that might not be available in the job market, especially currently given the pandemic. Now, I go back to something that Dr. Amardeep Thin said in our program when we were all in our MPHs. He was always talking about the idea that you guys are going to be new grads. Do not hesitate to take short-term contracts, like Linda mentioned. When you're going through these short-term contracts, extract as many skills and different expertises as you can and use that to leverage to the next one and to the next one. And even for myself, I found the exact same thing. Before I landed my full-time job, I was doing a couple of smaller contracts, and I leveraged those skills, expertise, knowledge, know-how within the organization to leverage that into successfully landing a job. So don't shy away from those short-term contracts.
And sometimes you might feel a little bit like, I don't know, kind of shame, like, oh, it's just it's a couple months, it's not a full-time job or a permanent position, sorry. But that's okay. Like, a job is a job, and you're building skills that you can use to, you know, land further opportunities. And so, like, there is no shame in a contract. Like, go for it.
Yeah, it's just the nature of our job market nowadays, right?
Yeah.
I want to add 2 points to that. So with permanent positions, what you'll often see is, whether it's a union position or not, it'll say internal applicants will be given preference. Because it's a permanent contract. That's very, desirable, in that it gives you that job security that you're not have to, you know, you have to think about your next contract. Okay. The second thing is, for shorter contracts, you have to think about who your competition might be. Okay. So if you're a mid to high tier level career professional, you would be less attracted by a 3 to 6 month contract. So you might have had previous frustrations going for jobs that you're very qualified for, but there's people more qualified than you also shooting for those permanent jobs, and then you fall on the lower end of that pool. Now, when you're going for 3 to 6 month jobs, those people, in theory, who already would have had a job with a better contract or a permanent contract, are not going to be in competition for those jobs, and then you have an opportunity to stand out in that kind of context. So you can't ignore that reality either. And the thing with contracts, if it's 6 months, you don't have to wait till your contract's done to start applying for a next job. Get the job, and then start looking, you know, within a reasonable time frame, 2 to 3 months before you finish your current job, to land your next best job, whether it's a longer contract or a permanent opportunity. So don't scoff at those shorter contracts, especially there's some very good ones out there where you could get that in your resume and stand out. And in COVID-19, and if people can see that you're a great worker, you might even get an extension, you know. There might be opportunities there where you can impress your manager, supervisor, or your employer, and open up even more opportunities in that organization. So never scoff at contracts.
And one more thing to add to that, it's a short-term contract, like 1 to 3 months maybe, right? That's a perfect opportunity to see if you even like the position or the organization. Yes. And not a lot of commitment for those of you that don't like commitment. That's fine.
That was my biggest fear post-grad, was like, what if I land a job and I hate it, but I can't leave because I need a job, I have to pay bills. So I liked the idea of a temporary contract to test it out, to try something new, to build my resume. And like LaShawn said, there's no commitment. I think in some organizations, as soon as people get in, they don't want to leave because it's a very well-paying, good benefits, but you get stagnant. That's my biggest fear in public health, is to be...
That was going to be a soundbite.
No, my biggest fear in public health is to get too comfortable that right. I forget why I'm there in the first place, that absolutely. I lose like that drive for innovation.
You want to be challenged.
Yeah, maintain the status quo. This field evolves so quickly that if you're not open to learning new skills, like you're going to miss opportunities to really make an impact because you're saying this is how we've always done it.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest fear, I think, in public health, is to stay in something for too long that you get stagnant.
Listen, even people who land permanent jobs end up leaving for other opportunities. So mm-hmm. it really means... And then in the context of COVID-19, where there's more opportunity for remote work, because I do understand that if you live in Ontario and then there's a 3-month contract in British Columbia, you're probably not going to relocate for that. It's too risky. There's a lot of uncertainties with that. But if there's a market now where you could do work remotely without the cost of relocation, you should be eating up those contract jobs because it's unlikely that they're going to want to relocate you for 3 months.
Hmm. I have a question to ask all of you. So when you were about to graduate at the end of your program, where did you see yourself? What type of job did you think you would be doing? And then now, you know, almost 2 years later, where are you? And how do those two relate to each other?
So I always remember in terms of answering your question, in our Master of Public Health program with Western University, prior to COVID-19, we had an opportunity to go to a conference basically called the Ontario Public Health Convention in Toronto.
Topic.
And this is something that our program emphasizes a lot because they value their students' self-advocacy to be able to network properly and make those connections that are useful for their future career goals. So I remember Dr. Thin, we had like a little what do you call them? Like a networking event.
It's been that long.
Yeah. I don't know what to call it. A networking
wine
event.
Wine and cheese kind of event, yeah.
Yeah, but basically, and this was during March, so before we even went on to do our practicum, and he said, "Hey, there's someone I want you to meet." So he introduced me to this person who worked for a health unit in a senior position, and we started talking, and I enjoyed the conversation, stayed in touch, of course, and then when it was time to go to my practicum, I said, "Hey, I'm very much interested in working at a health unit. What are some kind of skills outside of formal academic education that you would be looking for out of recent grads that you would hire?" So he told me, one of the most common jobs that's available for recent grads is health promotion. And these are some of the things that we would like to see for people who are going to be working as a health promoter. So I took that, spoke to my supervisor in practicum, say, "Hey, I know that this is not really a health promotion job, but I would like to add elements to the project that involve, knowledge translation, communication, that sort of thing that I could put on my resume for when I ultimately do apply for health promotion jobs." So did that. That worked out really well. Basically even secured a short extension opportunity to get paid. Like, I didn't get paid from actual practicum, but I did get paid to extend a project for a few months. And then I leveraged that to get a health promotion job ultimately at a health unit before I was finished graduating. So it just goes to show, you don't really have to have a plan going in, but you got to progressively elaborate and determine on a month-to-month basis, what is my next month going to look like? And I think that was very helpful in my situation.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let her compliment me. Don't jump in.
So,
yikes. I like how you had somewhat of a goal in mind and then you modified your practicum to be able to reach that end goal. I thought that was... Yeah, absolutely. You finessed it basically.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And it's just, and the good thing with our program too, they allow you to have some freedom in setting learning objectives with your, practicum organization. And obviously if it's like epidemiological data and your organization does no epi, you can't really, but if there's a way to tailor your experience to meet what you're trying to do after, I think it's worth doing.
Yeah, for me, understanding that our MPH program was more generalized program, mm-hmm. so there was no specific focus, And coming from a background that wasn't really familiar with the breadth of public health and how much it entailed, I really didn't have too many expectations. I was really there more so to learn about what public health entailed and get a better idea of the scope. And so just working through learning the different terminology, understanding concepts, important in public health. But one of the important moments for me was during my practicum placement in Thailand. And I spoke about this at length in many different podcasts, but this opportunity really shaped my perspective and what I wanted to do. And really after that practicum, I decided I wanted to focus more into global health. And so that's the direction I went, and I currently work in global health right now. So I didn't really have kind of this two-year plan of where I thought I would see myself, but I'm happy where I am right now. So it's just interesting how, you know, even though it's a short practicum, like 3 to 4 months, it was able to shape my direction for the next 2 to 3 years. And, you know, I've been learning so much, and I've been happy, and I've been able to apply all the different things I've learned in the classroom into practical situations, whether it be through engaging different stakeholders within the country or internationally.
The key part of that, though, LaShawn, is you were paying attention, right? You were being aware of what you liked and what you don't like. It wasn't a passive mm-hmm. process of just, I have 3 months to get through this thing. And, you know, you were looking, you're enjoying the moment. You're looking for things. What do I like? What do I not like? And then that kind of informed your next step. So that's what we really mean, like figuring it out on the fly. But you have to be paying attention. Mm. What do I like? I hate this practicum. Why? What about it? Is there anything that you like? What exactly yeah. don't you not like? How do you go about finding something that you like? It's got to be more than just, this is the worst practicum experience ever, and it's completely useless to me. Is there someone in there, in the organization, that seems to enjoy their work, and you don't really intersect with them a lot? Is there a way for you to talk to that person and find, hey, what is it about that particular thing you're working on that makes you love it so much? Like, you got to be paying attention and be aware.
Mm. Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
For me, my experience is similar to more Gordon. I didn't go to a different country like LaShawn and get that cool perspective, unfortunately, even though LaShawn asked me to go to Thailand with him. No.
Should have came.
I don't know if you would have been that productive.
Oh, I don't know. I hate the heat, so I would have just melted in Thailand. But for me, my experience could kind of be more akin to what we were talking about for those, like, you know, those three-month contracts. So for those people who are not familiar, a practicum is basically you have a placement at an organization that you choose through the program and whatnot. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's just a, you know, three-month contract in quotation marks where you try out the job.
Paid or unpaid.
Paid or unpaid, however you want to negotiate that. So for me, going into my MPH, I knew I wanted to get into research, and I knew, like, one of my goals for this MPH was, yes, there's the academic portion, but at the same time, I want a practicum at a place where I can see myself in X amount of years. So I was at, you know, the Princess Margaret Cancer Center, downtown Toronto, University Health Network, very strong research background there with their collaboration with U of T, University of Toronto. So I went in there, and then I made sure to have my mindset, and you should probably, you know, use this if you want for your the 3 month contracts, and having that mindset as well, is you got to pretend, even though you're there for a short period of time, that you're like a part of the team. You don't want to be thinking like, hey, I'm here, I'm visiting, and I'm gone. It's like, hey, I'm here, and I'm here to stay, even though you're not, obviously. And then once you bring that sort of energy, and then everyone else sees that, they're like, whoa, I'm going to miss this person when they leave. Oh, this person's leaving in half a month? We don't want that.
Like that. Yeah.
So, we can't have them leaving, man. Like, yeah. You got to have them, yeah.
Yeah. So, you have your 9 to 5, but if there's opportunities for you to be involved with, like, you know, are they doing a social? Are they having some sort of team event? Finesse your way into those things so you leave an impression. You're personable. You know, don't be overbearing, obviously. Just be yourself so people like you. And then if an organization really does like you, they will move mountains to keep you. And I don't think that's said enough in the job searching application, because the very nature of a short contract is that expectation, like, hey, you know, hi Gordon, bye Gordon, you know, like, so always always make an impression, leave your footprint in an organization, even if you have that expectation that you're gonna leave.
I love that point.
Also,
so important,
assess to if you want to stay.
You know,
that's
exactly
the part to think about too.
Yeah, but absolutely.
if you want to stay, but also keep in mind that it's part of the thing we talked about before with people needing or wanting to work for different reasons. So even if you don't want to stay, but you actually need to earn income, it's in your self-interest to still keep that bridge kind of level so that you're able to, you know, walk over if you do need to pick up that opportunity. But that's a great point, Ben. Like, you can't simply just look at a practicum as crossing dates in your calendar, be like, oh my god, 2 days left. Like, you can't go through it like that.
Yeah.
So Ben, what kind of work are you doing now?
So a lot of my work is based off research and building capacity for different populations for cancer education. And also on the more... Sorry, go ahead.
Does that build off of the practicum experiences you had?
Oh, absolutely. Like, my practicum was very, very research heavy. Not wet lab research, because I hate that. And I don't wish that upon anyone. But that's just me. So I was totally okay with just, you know, being on the computer, able to like synthesize data into like, you know, pilot studies or manuscripts or protocols. Me, I'm okay with that. And then a lot of what this position brought out in me is, you know, how can I improve healthcare? And then I had an interest in AI because I am into sci-fi and all that stuff. So there's a harmony of love there. So that's kind of where my direction is going for job skills and whether I like the job at all. So we've hit the final point of this. Does anyone have any closing remarks or takeaway messages?
I think my takeaway point would be, you know, just understanding that this is a tough period of time to be a graduate of a certain program, and there are a lot of barriers that other people in positions you want to be in haven't had to face. So just understand that also a lot of the recent graduates are going through what you are probably going to, and then you have a support network and people to, you know, lean on if you have any questions or concerns about your job searching process.
Absolutely. I think that support is so important. I wouldn't have been able to keep going if not for that support of people who are going through it too. See, it's not just you. And to add to that, I think the takeaway I would offer is to not limit yourself, because, you know, I thought I would do a certain thing, but I ended up somewhere else. And it's an opportunity that I would have missed if I was only trying to narrow myself to one type of work. So I think, yeah, allow yourself to be surprised and see what options come.
Yeah, those are good points. I think for me, just taking it back, you know, from what we talked about at the start, be intentional, deliberate in your job search. Be organized in your job search. Self-reflect. See where you're at. See what positions you think. Because on one hand, you have, do I meet the job's qualifications for experience and whatnot? And then, do you think you can even do the job? So for one thing I find myself doing is, okay, maybe I could finesse that I have an experience in this to get an interview for this job. But it's just like, do you want to be doing that? Do you want to be in a situation where you're not competent and you're applying for a managerial job and you're managing a team of 100 people? Do you really want to put yourself through that and you have no idea what you're doing? So is it even worth applying for those jobs? So you have to ask yourself those questions as well. Be honest. Anticipate the level of stress a job might have. Anticipate your resilience and being able to cope with certain stresses associated with a job, and apply accordingly. There's no reason that you would apply to a managerial job if your goal is to minimize the stress in your life. That's not the you know, actions don't match you know, the desired outcome there.
So you know, I think, what though, something that Gordon, what you were saying that made me think about was, let's say, you know, you see a manager position and you're like, I'm not qualified, I'm gonna finesse it. It's okay too to take a course or to like build the skills where you have gaps. And let's say you might pause your job search for a couple months to build your capacity. Like, that's a great strategy if you can afford it.
Just being honest with yourself, using your networks, like everyone has said, to identify what are the gaps, whether it's with your application or with the market, seeing how you can, what you can do to fill those gaps. And just job searching in of itself is a job. You got to dedicate some time. I know it can be stressful, but you have to have some level of discipline with it. Your 9-to-5 job is stressful, but you still do it. Job searching, whatever your mental capacity is, dedicate a certain amount of hours every day to job search. Keep yourself accountable, and you know, go at your pace. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Other people's situations are different. They might have more experience than you, less experience than you. They might have more options because they're willing to move. Everyone's situation is different, so you can't get disheartened by people making it seemingly doing better off than you are. And don't get frustrated with job searching either. I mean, there's a tendency with the, hey, entry-level jobs, you need 3 to 5 years experience, and you have that defeatist attitude that no matter what I can do, I'm not going to get the job I want. You got to throw that to the side right now. It's a very long process. Even for jobs that you do ultimately get, the job that I have now, I applied in the end of June 2019, and I heard back in September.
I hope September. You saved the job description for that, because
yeah,
when September. They got back to you, you needed to know what job you applied
for. Oh, I 100% did, and it was the worst resume I've ever submitted, and I got it. So it just goes to show, I mean, we'll get into that in our resume episode, that balance between quality and quantity, and I'll drop my controversial opinions against Linda. Me and Linda will have a debate.
Can't wait.
Thank you for listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for informative conversations, inspiring community action. If you enjoy our content and would like to stay up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. To learn more about our community initiatives and how you can support us, visit our website at thepublichealthinsight.com. Join the PHI community, and let's make public health viral.